When you were appointed Battalion Lewis Gun Officer, what kind of things did you have to teach the battalion troops about this new weapon which they were going to have to use?
Well, first of all, of course, you want to train the personnel of the Lewis Gun section in its handling from the point of view of keeping it in action with stoppages and so on, and secondly, of selection of firing positions, because a Lewis gun is rarely an automatic rifle. It has no fixed mounting, as does a Vickers machine gun. So problems arise when you're shooting in the dark, under any kind of obscurity of vision due to, say, gas or mist or smoke, and you've still got to be able to use it effectively by teaching, learning how to sight and handle your weapons so as to make the bullets go where you want them to.
Was there, in fact, at the time, any misinterpretation of its role by the people you were introducing it to?
I think at first people thought, oh, these are going to be machine guns, in the sense that they had seen Vickers machine guns used, and took them some time to realize that the tactical handling was really quite difficult because of its quite different characteristics.
So it's really intended to replace the rifle rather than to replace the machine gun.
Well, by that time, new weapons were commonplace, particularly the grenade. And I think the tendency of the soldier by then was rather to want to use grenades rather than the rifle. And so the defense, in a way, against attack was rather built up more on repelling it by grenades by the soldier, although he had his rifle, if the enemy came close enough, supplemented by the Lewis gun, if possible, firing an enfilade.
Did the measure of defensive rifle fire by the British Army tend to decline, in fact, and
Well,
be
there's no
repl-
doubt that the actual skill in handling rifles deteriorated very much, because it takes a long time to train a soldier to a very high degree of efficiency in that kind of bolt-operated rifle. Less so, perhaps, today, now you've got this automatic rifle.
Yes, but that decline would be due to increasingly greener troops who
Oh,
weren't so
yes.
well
Oh,
trained, rather than the
yes.
introduction of new weapons.
Yes.
Now, in the autumn of 16, you got trench fever. Well, what were the sort of conditions that had brought that on, and how uncomfortable was it?
I suspect that today trench fever would be classified as a virus and not indistinguishable from what is very often called flu. Undoubtedly, I think, was brought on by the sort of rather unpleasant conditions of smells and beastliness of trench life, though it actually developed with me shortly after we moved out of the Ypres Salient and were in resting behind the Somme in bivouac in the open, preparatory to going into the taking over sector in the Somme. I suddenly went down with a very high fever.
And you were hospitalized at Wimereux. What sort of treatment did
Well,
they give?
I just as you would for flu or virus today, and I was in hospital for about a fortnight, and then they sent me home on a week's leave, which was very acceptable.
Yes. Were the hospitals well organized?
Oh, very good. This was a base general hospital where they took those sort of casualties. A lot of trench fever cases, due largely to the, I suppose, virus, which bred in the unpleasant conditions of trenches.
I'd like you to tell me a little bit about the sort of intelligence work you were carrying out when you were a battalion intelligence officer in the spring of 1918. What exactly was the function of a battalion intelligence officer?
Well, the battalion intelligence officer was the most forward representative of the general army intelligence build-up. Let's say the representative in contact with the enemy. And therefore, one's job was first of all to try and find out anything different that was happening on the other side of the line, any indication of new movement, dumping of stores, new weapons, anything which suggested that something unusual was taking place. For example, the installation of gas cylinders, if such a thing had happened, or if some new shell burst, it appeared to be a new type of gas shell, or anything of that kind. Also to run observation posts of one's own, rarely to elaborate or to supplement the observation of the ordinary forward units. Mm. And then at night to go around and collect all the information you could from the forward units, anything unusual that happened to them that they'd seen, to collate all this in a report which one wrote in the early hours of the dawn, rather sleepily, and sent back and was collated further back. Mm. And as I did a short intelligence course at the Corps headquarters, where one saw the effect of all these reports coming in, how they showed a build-up of something unusual in various areas, indicating something was happening. Either the enemy was going to come forward or withdraw or something indicating that. Mm. For instance, at that time, the Germans were expected to withdraw, so we were looking out very much to anything which suggested the blowing up of dumps. That kind of thing. Anything was suggested that this withdrawal might be imminent.
Now, this period in 1918, when you were working as an intelligence officer, did you collect any kind of intelligence which reflected what we now know to have been the declining condition of the German army?
Well, one night we'd heard some transport moving on the German side, and in the course of a harassing fire burst by artillery, we suddenly heard what appeared to be a cart crashing down a road which was really obstructed just from the German lines. So we got out, patrolled once, and I had been out myself, and we found a German ammunition wagon, which had obviously been dumping mortar shell in the forward area, horse-drawn. One horse had been killed, the other was only a pony, but was alive, showing that they badly matched as a pet team. Incidentally, we pinched the pony and did rather well in a horse show later. And we got the unit that they were doing it. We also got some other detailed information, such as putties, which were very little made of any ordinary material. Most of the main strands were twisted paper. Look for soap, which was practically, because there were no fats available, and we found some soap which was almost the same as pumicestone, and no fat in it at all.
As part of your intelligence reporting activities, would you include information on things like the ground conditions on any particular sector that your battalion covered?
Well, not so much the ground conditions as doing a lot of reconnaissances for active movements and patrol work, and in the event of an actual set-piece advance, my job usually was to have to lay out the starting lines, organise the covering patrols for it, for troops to move forward to occupy them shortly before the 0 hour, and to follow up quickly behind with my intelligence section or in patrols, and to try and get back information as quickly as possible how things were going and where if things got held up, to try and supplement such information as the people, the troops themselves, could get back in days when we hadn't got walkie-talkies. Mm. And best communication was my runner or field telephone.
How good do you think the intelligence work was during the First World War, from your personal experience?
Well, I think latterly it was pretty good. the coordinated intelligence from a long period of study of the enemy side of the line. We had even balloons up, standing balloons, which I went up in one once. I can't say I entirely enjoyed it, and certainly the chaps who did it as a rule didn't very much, because the Germans had come where they were some there and used to come over and shoot them down, and a balloon is a fairly sitting target to a fighter.
Yes.
What?
Yes. Now, after your period in hospital in London at the towards the end of 1916, you stayed in England for a while, and in the spring of 1917 you worked in the training of an officer cadet battalion at Newmarket. One thing which particularly interests me about this period is whether the tactical training which was being given to these officer cadets had changed, and if so, in what ways, from the kind of tactical training you yourself had received in 1914, just before the outbreak of war?
Well, the whole conception of infantry tactics had naturally been changed by the development of trench warfare. In 1914, it was the basic idea was building up a firing line of riflemen, which would overcome by their fire the enemy defense. This conception, of course, disappeared very quickly, and it was in 1917 the problem was initially how to get infantry over the 200 or 300 yards between their positions and the enemy against barbed wire defenses swept by machine guns. That was the basic problem, and the problem for which the tank was brought in. Of course, that wasn't the only thing. It was also how to develop your operation once you broke through. But it was a very long time before we reached that stage.
Yes. Yes, I think it's really this point of the actual tactical handling of men, whether ideas had changed in this field as a result of experiences earlier in the war.
It was a different conception. It was, as it were, trying to get people more or less advancing in straight lines, over a certain limited distance to an objective, rather than the so-called systematic building up of a firing line, as in, which was the Boer War conception.
Okay.